This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Save big money on your next painting project with Menards. Get a paint that combines gorgeous color and durability. Dutch Boys Platinum Plus is a paint and primer with a protective finish that guards against scuffs, spills, and stains. Get $15 off instantly on a single qualifying purchase of $100 or more on Dutch Boy and Purdy products. Now through March 8th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, gay men, and welcome to another episode of Coming Inside Out. I'm your host, Brian Janes, along with my co-host, Mark Dembo. Hey, Mark. Good to see you again.
You as well, Brian. Feels like it's been not a moment since we've since we've chatted.
We're still wearing the same clothes from the last
Oh my God. Wow.
Well, this is part two of our amazing discussion with Mark, the gay sex coach.
Alan, the gay sex coach. I'd like to be the gay sex coach, but
you would like, you know. Alan, the gay sex coach. So we had so much information that we decided we were going to split our interview with him into two parts. So this is part two.
Yes.
So once again, welcome, Alan. When you were logging in, that is the conversation that Mark and I were having, because I wrote it down. When I was in my marriage, I did not share when I was masturbating. My wife would have been upset. Oh, I don't turn you on, or, you know, there would be guilt or shame surrounding masturbating. And when I saw your TikTok, I thought, oh, that is so interesting. That is so important. I would love to be in a relationship and my partner be allowed to like express a need or desire to masturbate and it be perfectly okay. It's not a reflection of me. It's not a reflection of me lacking in the relationship. It's just obviously we masturbate. That's so important. So
this is another area that I'm a huge advocate and fan for in terms of stepping into the tough conversation is having exactly what you just said. This has nothing to do with my attraction to you. I just want to get off in a different way. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, the vast majority of men that I work with do not talk about masturbation with their partner and couldn't tell you the masturbation habits of their partner. I am a big fan, put that conversation in the middle of the room and then have it, talk about it, and then normalize it, and then celebrate it and get curious. One of the first questions I ask couples when I work with them is, when is the last time you either sat in a chair across from each other or laid on the bed beside each other and just masturbated and watched each other without touching, including kissing, just masturbating together? 99.9% of the time, it's never is the answer that I get. They've never masturbated together. They've never watched one another. Most don't even send spicy pictures to each other, which is a whole other conversation that I think is super fun in keeping a relationship healthy.
Absolutely.
You know, run to the bathroom and send your man a picture at work when he's, you know, got a few minutes to take a look at that. But these are things that we view as taboo and wrong and dirty and bad. We meant to, and a lot of this, so I'm going to side rant here for just a minute. A lot of this goes back to teenage years. So when we're a teenager and we hit puberty and we begin to masturbate, we have to hide that from our parents or whoever we're living with, our brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles, grandparents, whoever it is that we live with, we have to hide. More importantly, we were also probably taught as a child, put your penis away, stop playing with it when you were really, really little. And if you kind of go back into your memory bank, you can probably remember being told that. So that automatically set your relationship with yourself. Your penis is bad and dirty. And when you touch yourself, you shouldn't, because it's wrong. And if you do, don't tell anybody and hide it. And then guess what? That begins the framework for your sexual life starting at that point.
Yep.
Side tangent. This is also where we see men experiencing performance issues and related to coming with their partner. All ties back to teenage masturbation years. And then it follows you forward. So that's kind of very multifaceted answer to your question there.
I like it.
But I think it is, you know, to me at least, I think to be able to masturbate with your partner, I think that's an incredibly, it's a great turn on and just can be very, what's the word I'm looking for? Intimate in so many ways, right? Because it's like
a little erotic, too,
letting your partner see a part of you. Yeah. Well, yeah. And letting your partner see a part of you that maybe you haven't been able to share before. And truly to be able to be open in that way.
There's something hidden in there that most men don't pay attention to. And that is when you are watching your partner, you are getting firsthand information at what gets them off. And this is another topic that I'm really passionate about. Mm-hmm. We don't teach out what feels good to our partners because we are afraid of hurting their feelings.
Yeah.
And that is a huge topic that I love to tackle. But watching your partner masturbate will give you so much information on how to please them. But most don't ever get to that point. So it's so incredibly sad. That's one of my missions to get out there in life.
Well, that, you know, that just actually got me thinking about something else and kind of bringing it back to, for those of us, you know, coming out later in life, you're married to a woman. For many of us, you had, you know, a sex life with your partner, but suddenly you're in a relationship or you're having sex with a man, which is suddenly very different than what we have been accustomed to. But we've all been trained that, you know, the goal is to finish. Come, you got to get there. And we, you know, how do we take a step back and say, wait a minute, let's find ways to really enjoy what the experience is and get in touch with your body and your partner's body. And, you know, just kind of just think about what you're saying about, you know, just masturbation. It's like, that seems like, well, that's a great way to get there.
It is. It is a fantastic way to get there. You know, it's, we have got to find a way to remove the pressure and the noise of finishing, of coming. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that 9 times out of 10, when I work with a man around performance, meaning inability to come, inability to stay hard, going hard then soft, and it's not a medical issue, 9 times out of 10, it is the pressure that is being added to finish. Mm-hmm. And when we start removing that as a goal and stepping into pleasure and curiosity is when we reignite our sex lives. So that's when we really start to get back on path and back to really what true pleasure can feel like. And it's hard for men, right? Because, you know, again, I'm going to take this back to teenage years. One of the other things that you had to do besides put your penis away and not masturbate in front of your family was you also had to finish as quickly as possible so that you didn't get caught.
Caught, right.
That follows you through your entire life as well, but it also follows you physically and mentally. So that's the other aspect. It's not just a physical component. It's also an emotional component as well. Mm-hmm. So it all ties back. It's very circular.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question regarding the dating apps. Unrealistic expectations. You've done a little TikTok on ghosting. Are people that are love bombing. So when you see a client or somebody comes to you, realistically, I mean, and I'm on the spectrum of ghosting.
Really important question, and I want to start with talking about apps for just a quick second, because this is another area that tends to draw the morality police in the world at large, and that's, you know, are apps good or bad? And there is a very loud group of voices that think that apps are wrong. But one of the things that I think is really important to understand is what we talked about earlier, which is access. And not everyone has the same level of access to community. So I am one of the people that think that apps are actually important. But with the caveat, how we use them is even more important. And using them with intention and thoughtfulness, and not a reflection of our self-worth, not a reflection of our bodies, and not a reflection of our ability to attract a partner. So with those caveats in mind, I think it's, you know, really important to be intentional with our app usage. And what I mean by that is when I work with people who are struggling with dating and struggling with putting themselves out there, and they're really struggling with apps in particular, it's what are we reaching for when we reach for the app? So that's a reflective activity that I assign to the men that I work with, is when you go to pick up your phone to log on to the app of your choice, stop for just a moment and listen to what you're feeling. What is the voice? Is it, am I horny and I want to get off? Is it, I need validation, I'm feeling bad about myself? Am I depressed and lonely? Getting in touch with the feeling, thought, or emotion that is driving you to pick up your phone. And most people don't really take the time to do that. So they never really have that opportunity or that moment to listen.
Compared to other people, it's like if I don't respond to somebody within hours or the next day, I'm ghosting them. I need time to process stuff. You know, if somebody reaches out to me on an app, I want to like think about it. I want to, you know, am I attracted to this person? Or are they aligned with, you know, where I'm at? Have a couple text exchanges with them. But I'm not jumping all over anybody or somebody that reaches out to me. I want to take my time. So what is an appropriate amount of time that I can take to get back to another person without having to worry about hurting their feelings or just, I don't know, just what, talk about that if you would, please.
I wish I could give you a clean answer on that, but here's the deal. Unfortunately, everyone has different expectations, wants, and desires in terms of speed of answer. You know, we have our famous friends who respond to text in just a second, and then we have our friends that respond to text the next day, right? But again, it goes back to everybody kind of moving at their own space and time. You're never going to please everyone on an app with your response time. So I think it's more about when you do respond, what is the response that you're getting that's going to tell you a lot about what you need to know about that person, why they're on the app, and why they're talking to you. And that's information that sometimes we kind of blow past pretty quickly to kind of get to where we're going. But that's where I would say slow it down just a little bit and really kind of take in that information. If somebody's really impatient with you that you didn't respond to their standard, that's telling you a lot.
Listen to it.
Well, let's put it out there on the internet that if it's not ghosting, if it's under 24 hours or 36 hours, let's like make it known so that these people don't, you know, oh, I didn't hear from you in, you know, in 2 hours.
Whatever. But I think, like... but Alan, I think that goes back to what you were, what you were talking about in terms of when you're going on the apps for yourself, having the intentionality of why are you on there? Right. Because I mean, let's say if you go on an app, and sometimes it depends which app you're on, but let's say you're on Grindr. If you go on Grindr saying, hey, I'm horny and I'm looking for a hookup, right? If that's your intent, you know, no judgment, right? If that's your intent and you reach out to somebody and they don't get back to you right away, the expectation is I'm horny, I'm looking for somebody that's going to respond to me right away and say, be here in 10 minutes.
All right, versus, but maybe also on the dating apps, though, like what is it,
Match.com, like Hinge or Match,
whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, also, I understand, like, you're on Grindr, you're horny, you want to hook up. If somebody doesn't get back to you in 10 minutes, you're moving on to the next person. But I'm talking about more of a dating app. These people mm-hmm. that you establish some correspondence and then either they disappear or you take longer than they would like you to get back to them. I don't know. It just seems to me it's like slow down. You know, I'm not developing a relationship with somebody over 12 text messages. We haven't met. We haven't talked on the phone. It's like...
So step one is a little unorthodox there, and that is really getting comfortable living in ambiguity, meaning I'm going to be okay that I can walk away from this app and come back and not be upset or triggered if the other person is butthurt that I didn't respond in their time frame, because I'm honoring my time frame. And I don't say that to be passive aggressive, but more about just honoring your own internal mental boundaries when you're on an app. And then again, when you do respond, making sure that we're thoughtful and intentional. We don't need to go in with people pleasing and apologizing for not responding on their time frame, but more just about, we're all grown adults. We should be able to pick up and leave off where we have those opportunities. Think about our friendship circles, right? Like, we all have our inner circle of friends, but then there's the next ring, which is, you know, for me, a friend that I might talk to every couple of weeks versus an internal sphere of friends that I talk to daily, right? It's kind of the same thing, but move it over to the apps. We should be adult enough to be able to say, a day has gone by, the world has not ended, and this conversation can continue. If you run into unique answers or responses or receptivity to that, that's where I begin to get a little concerned, because that information is going to tell you a lot about the person that you're talking to, right? Like, do they have an unusual attachment style? Are they really just overeager beaver and wanting to jump in immediately? Like, this is all information that you need right up front, because it will save you so much heartache on the back end. So I always tell people, listen to that. But for you yourself, stay in your own intentionality when you step into that app and know why you're on the app and what you're looking to accomplish. And then just be honest about it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Hardest thing for gay men on apps to do is the hardest thing for gay men to do is to say, hey, Brian, it was really nice meeting you on this app. You're not my type, but I wish you well. Gay men will not do it. It's so hard. Mm-hmm. Ties back to people pleasing. I need to be liked. I don't want to be hated. I don't want to be disliked. I don't want people to think I'm rude or mean or ugly. So instead, we buffer when really, you know, we have to realize we're not pizza. We can't please everybody. So, being able to just step into that with honesty and say, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I don't feel a click romantically or sexually, and then agree to be friends and move on.
Yeah.
We're not quite there yet, but I'm going to keep preaching this sermon.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you. Because I needed to hear this, because I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day. I met someone on a dating app. We exchanged a bunch of text messages. We agreed to talk. When we got on the phone, who cares? For me, it didn't work. He was very feminine on the phone. That's not what I'm attracted to. So when we hung up, I deleted the profile. And my friend's like, hey, you should have liked this, that, you know, like had this communication or this closure with them. I don't know how to do that. I'm like, if it's not somebody I'm interested in, I just tend to cut bait. So I need to hear that. So one more time, we're not a match. What is an appropriate response for somebody to put out there on an app?
You know, I say, you know, use this in your own words, stay true to yourself, but say something like, you know, hey, it's been a really fun time talking to you, or I've really enjoyed getting to know you. And then, you know, go straight in. We don't need to pamper or pad any additional feelings at this point. And then just say, I'm not feeling a connection, whether that be sexual, whatever it is that you're pursuing at that moment. If it's sexual, I'm not feeling a sexual connection, or I'm not feeling like the next step of going on a date, fill in the blank with whatever it is that is the reason you're on the app, and then keep it short and sweet. You know, yeah. We don't owe other people explanations. And I will put one caveat out there that's really hard. You also must be able to receive this information yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's even harder.
It. And not internalize it, right?
Right.
Yes.
We see this. We really, this is where men who come out later in life don't really get to see this. But as we honor our elders, those who have been in cruising spaces really understand this. Because cruising spaces have those boundaries and those limits, asking for consent and then acknowledging when we're not interested and moving on. If we could take that and move that over, it would be a great thing. But, you know, our elders established that, you know, many, many years ago, that protocol, and it's very normal, but it's just not so normal in app world yet. But yeah. We're going to change that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Points and great advice.
I have another question for you regarding masturbation. So you're working with couples. I don't know if you encourage it or if it's just conversation that you have where, you know, to have the comfort to be able to talk about when you masturbate, but also talking about masturbating with each other. What about sharing what you're thinking about while you're masturbating with your partner? Because, you know, when I masturbate, I have a fantasy in my mind typically that gets me to, when I'm masturbating, sharing that with your partner also. That seems like a very vulnerable space to be in.
It is very vulnerable, but I think it is wildly erotic and connecting if you can let your guard down and share that with your partner. You know, what's going to take you over the finish line or what really gets you going. You'd be surprised what you'd learn about your partner. And then I always encourage people, you know, when you're in that moment and you have that moment of sharing, be sure to circle it back up later when you're in the kitchen cooking, just to make sure that you've hashed it out, because sometimes we fantasize about things that we wouldn't actually do.
Yes.
And that's an important thing to do as well, because we don't want to alarm our partner. You know, like your fantasy could be something very, very wild that you wouldn't do in the relationship. And then your partner's going to walk away going, like, does he really want a gangbang? Like, I don't know. You need to follow up on that and make sure that you've hashed that out and that they feel really good about the fantasy itself. It doesn't need to be an hour-long deep conversation. But if you have something maybe a little unique that gets you over the finish line, then you might just want to circle back if you've never talked about it with your partner before.
All right.
But big fan, big, big fan. You can learn so much from each other. It also lets you know a little bit about their inner psyche and what, you know, what's going on there. Some of those more hidden, more delicate things that we've kept to ourselves for years and years and years. When you can let them out, it is so incredibly freeing and liberating. You know, I use the analogy of, you know, does your partner know the code on your phone? And do you ever hand it to them and say, hey, can you look this up for me? And I get really wild answers on that one. Really, really wild answers. But it kind of speaks to that basic premise there.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. You mention in a relationship a rule book. And establishing a rule book with your partner. Can you talk about that a little bit and just some of the other things that go into it?
Yeah, this is another thing that I don't think we talk about enough as gay men, especially in relationships, and that's creating a rule book. It goes back to what you spoke about earlier. How do we feel about porn? You know, what that should go in the rule book. And the rule book is not an actual book. It's just a conversation. If you want to put it in an actual book, you could, but for most people, it's just a conversation, an agreement, if you will. But what does that look like? You know, what are the do's and don'ts of the relationship? What constitutes cheating, to your question earlier? You know, so this is where the gay world is so wide and big and beautiful that if you don't define it, the undefined can come back as a problem later.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is, like, is DMing with someone on Instagram, is that cheating to you or not? You know, and only the couple can define that. Is posting a shirtless picture on Instagram, is that too much or not? Porn, masturbation. And then you can really, depending on what the couple is, their relationship structure, you know, then you start kind of moving out of monogamy world, and then we would transition into like monogamish world, and that couple would have an additional set of rules in their book as, you know, what constitutes monogamish, which for some might be once a year a couple's massage where it has happy endings for both. For others, it could be something completely different. But you see with so many options on the buffet that if you don't put it in the book, you're leaving yourself exposed for potential hurt or conflict later. So let's cut that off at the pass and talk about it from the very beginning and form an agreement around it. And then step two, super important, revise, evaluate, talk about it, touch base. How's it working? How's it going? How are we feeling about that? We don't create it, put it on the bookshelf and walk away from it. We revisit it from time to time, especially if something pops up for us. Hey, something new is turning me on. I want to tell you about it. Again, put the ugly conversation in the middle of the room, have it, and then put it into your rule book.
Yeah, I totally get that, because as somebody who's newly out, I'm not exposed to half of what's going on in the community. And as I gain more exposure and knowledge about the community, my mind is going to open more to different things. Yeah. So,
And I think, Alan, picking up on something you mentioned earlier, too, along the lines with that rule book, it would seem that it's also very important that you go back and revisit it on whatever cadence makes sense, because things change. You might say, here's where we are right now. But if either partner, you know, they, it's a continuum, right? Things might change over time. As you said earlier, you've got to be able to go back and say, hey, let's look at this again and see what we might want to do differently.
There's an interesting correlation that I've looked at in the, I keep anonymous data on the men that I work with, so just markers for data purposes only. But here's one thing that I've learned that I think is pretty powerful, and that is the more secure that a couple is with each other, the more that rule book kind of expands, because there is a level of safety there that is impenetrable. And it allows for more room. And sometimes, and it's not to say that the opposite or inverse is wrong or not capable of, but sometimes a newer couple that doesn't quite have that safety may keep things a little tighter and a little closer. And then as that safety deepens, it kind of changes and evolves. So Mark, to your point, it's really important to go back and have those conversations.
Yeah.
And it's really also supremely important to, when we have a shift in our needs, wants, and desires, that we talk about that with our partner. Because one of the things that I've also learned is that we also have seasonality with our wants, needs, and desires. And I'll give you my own personal example here, because I'm an open book and I'm not shy. I went through a phase in my 30s where I was very curious about the leather community. I wanted to dress up in all the things and go to the leather bar. And that lasted for a period of about 2 years. And then I kind of woke up one day and said, this is fun, this is great, no harm, no foul, nothing against that community, but I just wasn't as interested in it one day. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a passing thing for me that didn't stick. But you have to be able to discuss that with your partner, say, hey, I'm curious about, and allow them to come in and lift you up and support you, and go down that path of curiosity, or you go down a path of isolation and secrecy, and that is not a good place to be.
Yeah. So it comes back to, again, that I think the open communication, right? Being able to be transparent and saying, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is, I want to explore this, or I'm curious about this, or I went down that path and okay, did it. And now I'm ready to move on.
Yeah. And then the harder component of that, Mark, is when one of us expresses something that the other one is not interested in, then we have to create a new space and navigate that. Sometimes that ends up on my desk because I'm the Sherpa for that. Other couples can sometimes navigate that on their own, but we also have to be prepared that if we know our partners really well, we typically don't get sideswiped or surprised by these things, but I've seen a couple of instances where a partner came up and said, I'm really interested in this. And the other partner was like, what? Like, that's a hard no for me. So then we have to deconstruct that. And what is that going to look like for that couple? How are they going to make this work to allow one to explore and the other to be okay with the exploration? And in most cases, if there's a good level of security, emotional and psychological safety and communication in the relationship, we can make it work. It's just different for each person.
Yeah. Perfect. Makes sense.
So I want to go back to guilt, shame, suppression, things that we go through, and how that translates into body image. That's one of the things we have down here to talk about. I think it's so important to talk about body image. I try and stay fit because I don't like to look at myself in the mirror if at a certain weight, but how body image plays into all of that and how big this is in our community on both sides, on the fit side and on the maybe the overweight struggling side.
There's so much to unpack there because, you know, that starts at such a young age, right? Like we're introduced to G.I. Joe and Superman figurines that have these perfect plastic little bodies of what a man should look like. We have our childhood taunting of the heavier person. We have the jocks in school, and that's all very formative. And people, you know, I don't spend a lot of time in my work going back to childhood. That's just not a place where my work takes, but it's really important to understand that developmental process and that period in time because it does shape how we show up as adults. Mm-hmm. So that's going to follow you around through life and what the kind of the perfect male body looks like. And then you get into gay world and that's amplified, right? Because if you've been to a really large nightclub where maybe they're having a circuit party, you go in and see these beautiful, muscled, tanned, shaved bodies that just look like perfection. And you think, wow, like I'm just an average guy from New York.
Oh, you're describing me, Alan?
With a dad bod, yes.
But, you know, I think the important thing is to kind of zoom out a little bit and understand two things. There's two components. One is that there is a body type and attraction for everything. And that's where I think the gay community really shines. We have twinks, we have bears, we have otters, we have wolves, we have circuit party queens. Well, like you name the group, we have it. And if you have an attraction that's, you know, I'm an unusual person in that I don't really have a specific type. My partner would probably tell you that I do, but I think there's something kind of beautiful in all men and all shapes and sizes. But if you have that attraction, you can find it in the gay community. So that's a really cool aspect that I like. The harder part of that is being able to stand in front of a mirror naked in your 50s when we just don't hold muscle tone like we used to. We put on pounds as we get older. Our testosterone drops a little bit. Things change, right? And to be able to look at that and go, I've still got it. I'm still sexy. That's a hard thing to do. And oftentimes
you're still sexy to somebody. You're still sexy to somebody.
Absolutely.
Maybe not yourself, but somebody else.
But then sometimes we'll shift to external validation for that. And that's where things get really dicey. That's when we start putting ourselves out there in such a way that elicits that feedback that we want to validate ourselves to feel really good about where we are in the process. Where I encourage people to get really quiet with yourself. I'm a big fan of mirror checking. I know you personally don't like mirrors, but I'm a big fan of really just having a man stand naked in front of a full-length mirror and take it all in. And instead of listening to the judgment and the shame and the fear and the guilt, really looking at yourself and telling yourself what you see that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because we have the science and we have the data to know that our central nervous system absorbs all of this and it takes it in over and over and over. So the more negativity you give it, the more it sucks it in. The more positivity you give it, the more it sucks it in. So being able to stand there and look and go, you know, I don't have 17-inch biceps anymore like when I was in my 20s, but for 56, I look pretty damn good. My arms are looking good today. And then walk away from it. That's all you need to do. And give yourself a positive message and feed it to your central nervous system every single chance you get.
Yeah.
Most men have beautiful qualities. It's just they've never been told or they've never realized them or they've just never had the emotional space to enjoy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I like for men to get really, really quiet. And I do some really unorthodox things. I have men take pictures of themselves, not to share with me, but just so that they can go back and look at it on a screen. And while that exercise may sound completely wacky to you, there is a lot of power in taking a nude photo of yourself and then going back and looking at it and going, okay, like I photographed pretty well. And then what you do with that is up to you. You can hit delete or you can send it to a friend. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. I just want you to go through the activity of doing it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that we can do to talk positive back to ourselves. And then, you know, part of that's just good old honesty, like getting real with who we are in our 50s. And I'll be honest with you. I may be a little bit more dad bodish today, but I am way happier with the man that I am in my 50s than I was in my 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
So that is a result of me intentionally looking in the mirror and giving myself those positive messages. And then guess what? You don't, once you start telling yourself that, that confidence is going to radiate out, and then you will get naturally validated. Even though we're not looking for validation, we don't want validation, we don't need it, it's going to start coming anyway. And then that gives you that little dopamine hit that feels so good. You get called daddy for the first time and you're like, okay, right?
And for most of us, we actually are daddies, but in a different context.
Slightly different context.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's a really, really good point in that. You know, I'm thinking about how this applies, again, for those of us coming out later in life, where I think the body image could be even amplified because we're coming out at a later stage when many of us, you know, you're not in the same shape you were in your 20s or 30s. And so that adds to the, wait a minute, how am I going to find my way in this community? And is anybody going to find me attractive? And to be able to reinforce for yourself and build that confidence can be really, really key. So I think that's an especially important point for so many coming out later.
Yeah, I feel very comfortable in saying, both from a psychology perspective and just as a man, if you don't have that confidence within yourself, you are going to attract all of the wrong people into your life at that point. So as hard as it is, working on self-confidence first will help us as we go out and begin to date and look for a mate or a spouse or a partner that is what we are looking for. So that's so incredibly important what you just said.
Yeah. Alan, any other key topics that we haven't covered? Or Brian, you looked like you were about to ask a question.
Well, I wanted to talk about fuck buddies. Because this is for myself, I really want a connection with somebody. I want a relationship. I've said that on the podcast before. I want a long-term monogamous relationship. But in the meantime, I would love a fuck buddy. Well, we're waiting for what we want to come to fruition or to manifest. I don't want to feel guilty about it, but, you know, that's kind of what I would like while I'm waiting.
Makes sense. And it saddens me to think that that question might draw judgment from someone because it so shouldn't, right?
Okay. Well, hold on. This, I guess I'm leaving a little piece of that out. What if the person that you're going to have as a fuck buddy is married to a woman who's closeted, who's not out? Is that bad karma?
That's a tough one. You know, the core of my work is all about honesty, you know, right? And being honest with ourselves first and foremost so that we can step into the biggest life that we can possibly lead. Here's the deal. At the end of the day, do I think having sex with someone who is married and not out of the closet, you know, that has a whole lot of moral components that go with it that I don't feel comfortable judging, because where I get a stop is, are you living true to your personal values by hooking up with this person to begin with? And would you want to be in the same situation? So for me, it starts with me. Am I living according to my values, I don't really love the word moral. It's very biblical to me. And I'm just going to say personal values. But am I in accordance with my personal values? If I were to meet this woman, could I stand face to face and have an honest conversation with her without feeling any sort of guilt? And if I can't answer those questions, there's a million fuck buddies out in the world that I could go find. Perhaps this isn't the one.
Okay.
Pro fuck buddy, not pro when we get into possibly interrupting a family situation that could cause a really negative outcome.
Yes. I find that being an open out gay man, I tend to be a magnet to married men. I don't know if you know why, but that seems to be the type of men that respond to me on apps. And I would never want to, like you said, to disrupt a relationship or for to be a, I don't know, as much as I don't want to be a part of that, that seems to be what comes to me. And I feel really guilty about it. But at the same time, I don't know, I've had a couple of connections with married men that have been very powerful, knowing that that's as far as they're going to go.
Yeah, you know, I think we've all had those experiences, right? At one point or another. I know I certainly have when I moved from North Carolina to Miami. When I joined the gym there, I mean, it was nothing but married guys coming after me left and right. It was mind-boggling. And, you know, most of them fell into the camp of casual encounters, more like the shower at the gym, like quick finish, no names kind of situation. So it didn't go much deeper than that. But, you know, fast forward to my 50s now, it's more about, again, starting with self first, like, how am I really feeling about this? And look, I am not the morality police. So, you know, some viewers watching this may say, I'm totally okay with it because this guy is not getting it at home and I can give him something that he needs and I'm doing a service. Others may look at it and go, this goes against every personal value that I hold true to myself and I could never do this knowing that there's a wife and kids at home. That is something that only the person can decide. I'm not here to police that, so to speak. It's really, for me, the most important part in the work that I do is you. It starts with you and how you're feeling, and does it align with who you are as a man at this stage in your life? And if you can answer that concretely and feel really good about that answer, that's all I want from men, is to be able to feel really good and comfortable that they're being authentic and true to themselves.
Thank you.
Alan, any other key topics that we haven't covered that you want to offer any thoughts on?
I hope we've given something to every viewer that's watching that can walk away with something tangible from this little web that we weaved during this conversation.
Well, this has been really great conversation. And before we wrap up again, let me just give you an opportunity. Tell us where people can find you and anything else you want to share.
The easiest place to find me is thegaysexcoach.com. I'm also that same username on Substack and TikTok and Instagram. Substack is where I get to dive in really deep on these topics because that's my written platform, whereas TikTok, you get the 1 minute version of what it is that I'm talking about. For your viewers out there, typically what I do is I will take a TikTok that is, you know, about a minute long, and then the following week I expand that topic into a full-blown article. And then if, you know, people would like to look at the work that I do individually, you know, person to person, they can find all that on my website as well, which is got everything you need to know about me and my work and all that good stuff is located there.
Excellent. Well, Alan, thank you so much for taking the time. Yes,
we'll put
it
in our show notes too.
Thank you.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining us today. It has really been a pleasure. We covered a lot of ground, and I'm sure this will, you know, probably trigger even more questions from our viewers and listeners. So thanks for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the opportunity.